Mic session number 11212, reel 4.
Colonel R.B. Humphreys, Reel 4. You went to the military college, Colonel, from school through an examination and into the college. Was that the only route by which...
The only route for all except 15, about five per term, of which there were... that was intermediate, junior intermediate and senior, of which there were, out of those five... where the other ranks came through the back door as other ranks. Now, in the senior term, there was one case of one having done so well that he became a senior under officer, another rank. He'd had 5 years in the army in the East Surreys, I think. And he, unfortunately, didn't do very well when he went into his regiment. He was yellow when he went into his regiment when the war came. A fellow called Rose. In fact, he was my SUO. He went to the KSLI, red-headed chap.
You'd be expected to keep up with the traditions or to model yourselves on the traditions of the college.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And was there... punishments if you broke those kind of traditions in any way? Was a disciplinary action taken if those traditions were broken in any way?
Oh, yes. I mean, if you did something frightful, you paid the price. I mean, the traditions were such that a very firm line was put between stealing and crime. Then, of course, you paid the price, whether you'd been Sandhurst, whether you'd been to the ranks or whether you'd come through the school, whatever school it might be. But then if you, only minor things, I mean, you paid the price in just a punishment.
Who was the commandant while you were there?
Sir Reginald May, Major General Sir Reginald May. And he was a... he finished up, I think, as Lieutenant General, doing something at the beginning of the war. He was a very fine old thing. What he got his knighthood for, I don't know, as a Major General. He was a Royal Fusilier.
So you left the college, you passed your examination at the end of the time, you passed out. How did you come to move into the Durham Light Infantry?
Well, I told you, I think, last time, but you didn't record it, that I wanted to go into the KSLI because I've got property, or rather my father had property in Shrewsbury, and my brother and I were going to come into that property when he died. And therefore, the KSLI, being the sort of near Mumshire, because that's where I lived, came straight to my mind. I didn't want the South Wales Borders, as it was then, because it was a rugger regiment, and I hadn't been to a rugger school. And I thought, well, to go to a regiment where I don't know even how to play rugger. Also the Welsh regiment had won the Army Cup many, many times. Also the Welsh Guards. Also the Royal Welsh Fusiliers. So that put the whole of Wales out. Mum should have been England, actually, because in those days... it was a part of England. But, so I plumped for the KSLI, and I said to this remarkably fine platoon commander of mine for the last term, the Honourable Lytton Milbank, who I told you, I think, became the Earl of Lytton and only died aged 91 or something a short time ago. I asked him, I said, "Sir, what do you think regiment should I go to? I want to go to the Kearsallaigh because it is where we own some property and it is near Mumbleshire. Shops is only two up. And he said, well, I'll look into it. And he looked into it and he said there are five applicants for three vacancies, and all those applicants are either sons or have brothers or have fathers. I had fathers and uncles in the regiment. And provided they pass out in front of you, which was likely because I wasn't bright, they will get it. Right, that was absolutely stupid to pursue that. So then I said, when I want a regiment with the maximum amount of horse and the minimum amount of money to be spent on them, where you've got a sporting regiment, do all kinds of things. He immediately said, oh, well, rather than the Kearsallaigh, the Durham Light Infantry. Its polo history is second to none. Its hunting history is second to none. It always has horses, be them cheap. 15 bobbers, which you've got a 15 bob for a month. Horse, which was a sort of token fee. Mind you, we had to find the forage. But that wasn't all that amount, because they got it in bulk for the unit horses anyhow. Because they had some unit horses to pull the limbers, the carts. Actually, we still retained our unit horses, although when I joined, we were the experimental machine gun battalion of a machine gun brigade, of which, believe it or not, Maitland Wilson, later Field Marshal, was the Brigadier Maitland Wilson, and the Div commander of 2 Div was Major General Wavell, one eye in the lot from World War I. He was living at Aldershot. And the three other regiments in the brigade were the Warwicks at Woking, the South Staffs at Queen's Parade, Aldershot, and the DCLI lying alongside us in barracks at Blackdown, and ourselves. We were in Dettingen barracks, and they were in, can't remember. And those barracks were old First World War barracks, and you sat in your room when it rained, and you got your buckets out. From the first night I got there, it poured down, and I got my bucket out, and my, you had in those days a jerry, because it was miles to walk to the pea place, and the jerry and everything. And even then, I mean, it was all over the floor. It couldn't. The jerry soon overflowed, and the bucket soon overflowed.
So you applied for the Durhams, and obviously
I got it. Yes, well,
when did you go?
I went to tea with General Luard, who lived at Yates, and his son had just got into the Durhams. Brilliant boy who died of double pneumonia only 3 years afterwards, and was going to be adjutant, which is terribly sad, because, I mean, old General Luard was the general at Hong Kong in 1927 when the 2nd Battalion went on the Shanghai Defence Force. He was the overall general in charge of Shanghai and Hong Kong. And his ADC was Robin Johnson. And his son was at Wellington. And he was a senior when I was a junior. So he was a year in front of me. 1 year. And there was an outstation where the Great Wall of China meets the sea. This was a year after I'd joined, and I was down there because I was an unofficial ADC to the generals, Brigadier General's wife, General's Brigadier Sir John Laurie, Lady Laurie, and I'd gone down with them and the children to their bungalow, and I was there, but I wasn't where he died, of course. He'd been for a ride with Colonel Norn, who wrote to me only the other day, along the Great Wall of China. You could go ride right along. And thoroughly enjoyed himself. Thoroughly enjoyed himself. And here's the letter. Now, wait a minute.
So what date did you join the regiment and where?
I joined it on the 31st of January, 1935, at this place, Blackdown, Dittingham Barracks, in this scruffy room. I went with my brother in the car. I got to the mess, and there was no one in because it was late afternoon. And then somebody came in a suit. Very nice. Old man, I thought, well, this is a very old officer indeed. And he explained that he was the mess sergeant, who'd been there for years and years and years and years, sans glass, and that he would show me my bedroom, walk along the passage, and my brother, and get my brother some tea while he was showing me the bedroom, and we sat on the bun freezer, and then Miles Mason, most charming man, came in, and a very 6 foot sixer. And a charming man who was a subaltern with quite a lot of service. And he welcomed us and said, oh, how nice to have you here and all this kind of thing. You know, I'm sure you will be happy. And we had our tea. And then my brother departed with his car, because he brought me in his car. And life began as a second lieutenant.
Very
pink about the knees. What?
How did it begin? What were the kinds of things you were faced with?
Well, then I was told by Miles, and the other two subalterns by that time had come in, who joined with me, Robert Allen and Coop. So they'd come from different parts of the... One from London and one... Both from London, because Robert was... aunt lived in London. And Coop came down with him, I think, because he was... at Christ Hospital with Rob. And we were told that we got our mess kits because we got them in advance. So we've got red mess kit, everything.
And did you have to buy those yourself?
Oh, yes. Yes, that was the most expensive item of all.
Can you describe the full kit?
I can show you one if you like.
Does that have to go on the tape?
Oh, yes. No, don't bother. This full kit was very unusual. Red small jacket, green cuffs with two little tiny buttons there, gilded buttons. Old Rose facings. Now, Old Rose was terribly unusual. I mean, a lot of regiments, they had yellow, they had white, they had buff, they had green, they had dark green, they had light green, they had light infantry green, they had everything. We had just the green cuff to show we were light infantry, and Old Rose facings, which was corded silk. Well, now we put our mess kits on, having been told by Sergeant Larson and Miles what time we must be ready for dinner, and being rather new at pulling Wellington boots up and things like that, one took quite a time. A batman was appeared at the door and reported, and a man called Metheringham, I had, a private soldier in his uniform, and said he'd come to help me because I was just... going to be his master, and he was going to be my batman, and he sort of unpacked and laid the stuff out on the bed and that sort of thing. And Dewey got into my red, and Robert Allen was in about two rooms up. He got into his red, and Coop got into his red, and we appeared on time because there was no sort of punctuality. It was very strict to arrive on the mess for dinner. We appeared on time in the mess for dinner. By that time, there were a lot of people in red already. Miles and people had come in having changed, and they were having their pandial drinks, sherry or whatever it was, gins or something. We couldn't afford to have those, because on 3 shillings missing a day, with a pay of 3 and 10 a day, net profit 10 pence, to pay for your washing, to pay for your, that's the, some old sergeant's wife to do your stiff shirts, and they had to be done properly starched and everything, to pay for your batman a month.
Just to come in there, I didn't realise that batmen were paid. You paid an additional amount from your own salary.
Yeah, they were paid properly for their pay. But they only got £3 a month. It was a token. They got £3. They got about 15 bob a week, you see. Then, I think I told you before, my father had allowed me the minimum, which was £50. General Lord said, I allow my son £50. And that is the minimum, and if you've got more, take it. But if you've got £50, you'll be all right. And this man, Coop, hadn't. I told you that story. I think you recorded it. Right, we went in, and we had to be abstemious. No treating in the mess. Nobody came up and said, have a drink, because there's no treating in the mess, you see. And so we talked amongst ourselves about Sandhurst, and we talked with Miles and Mark Leather and Crackers May and and Oscar came in, and then there was a nice chap called Taffy Nickel, whose company I went to, I mean, not his company, Sir George Stobart's company. He'd only just joined from Cambridge about a year before with Oscar. And Cambridge people always took a step up, you know. As they were older, they joined level with somebody who joined from Sandhurst at that time, but above. And so Taffy Nickel from Cambridge and Oscar from Cambridge, St. John's, had joined equal to Reggie Atkinson. No, equal to George Lister Todd. They said joined a year and a half in front of me, but they'd gone up. Yeah, so Oscar's a good 2 years older than me. Then Taffy Nickel came in. Taffy Nickel was killed within a week of coming into that mess because he went to ride in a point-to-point. He missed his ride because they were late to clearing. On the way home, Horriven, who we went to ride with him and was driving the car, was dashing to get back because they wanted to see if they could get a ride in another point-to-point nearby. And they were going round the Stockbridge corners too fast. Something came round, went slap into them. He was killed, and Horriven was survived. To tell the tale, I mean, he wasn't even damaged enough to go to hospital. It came, hit the passenger side, and he was killed outright. Right, I spent a week with George Stobart, having reported next day after this mess for dinner, and then this happened a week, and so Taffy Nickel was in C Company, and I went over to C Company to take his place. Did men's shoes.
Which battalion was this, by the way, Colonel?
1st Battalion. 1st Battalion, 68th Light Infantry, before the days of the guard war system.
As we're talking about the mess, can you describe to me how an officer's mess was organized and run?
It was run by a PMC, who was a selected senior officer. In this case, it was the second in command, was PMC. No, it wasn't. It was Harold Simpson. Harold Simpson, and he handed over to the second in command very shortly afterwards, Gray Wilson. And they had the ordinary rations for each officer to play with, which was the basic things like sugar and milk and butter and things like that. And then they bought, I mustn't say, but exotic foods for dinner nights and things like, not caviar, but things like avocado pears and things like that, you know. And that all came to 3 bob a day. Each officer, irrespective of rank, paid 3 bob a day's messing. Now, the married officers who lived out, and they got, didn't get their rations or anything, they paid a nominal sum, because they didn't eat, you see, inside. They paid, I think, 1 and 6 a day or something. So it meant if there were a lot of married officers, it fell more heavily, not in cost, because it was dead 3 bob a day, but there was more likely to be a debt. Anyhow, this was managed by the PMC, who was assisted by 2 subalterns, one in charge of silver and belongings, which had to be checked very carefully most days. Well, not most days, because we had a most wonderful silver man who was gamekeeper's son, and he had a strong room and did a lot. Very old soldier with Rooty medal, a lot. He'd been there for years in the same job. And then we had this redoubtable and wonderful Sergeant Glass, who'd been there for years, never wore anything but a suit, and at dinner, at night, a dinner jacket on all normal nights, and on a guest night, white tie and tails. The mess waiters, one was a Corporal Lauderdale, and one was a Lance Corporal Metcalf, and then the batmen took turns, and they were all fitted out in footman's uniform, which was glorious. I mean, it was a tailcoat with buttons down the back, dark green. And, of course, Lauderdale and Metcalf had their own because they were permanencies in the mess. He was the mess corporal and Lance Corporal. And the batmen had a whole series that fitted them. I mean, my batman, Metheringham, I don't think he was on that night, but if he was, he'd go and he'd be fitted out by sandblast in the mess office with a uniform for the night. And, of course, they all had the... They didn't wear their army boots because of cluttering around. They were given shoes because the ordinary private soldier in those days was not given a pair of shoes. I mean, if he walked out, he walked out in his army boots, or he had bought a pair of shoes of his own, whatever it be, black shoes or what. Anyhow, they were given their shoes just again for the night. They had a series of sizes, and there were perhaps, depends rather how many were dining in that night. If there were always the corporal and the lance corporal on permanent duty. The lance corporal was the man who brought the drinks, if they had drinks with the food. And then there was either one batman. I mean, if Metheringham had reported and there were not enough people to warrant a batman, he would be dismissed. So there were 2 of these flunky types going round the mess table, and the mess sergeant, no, sorry, white-tied tails every night. erecting them, white tantails.
And was there a cook attached to the mess? Who did the cooking?
Oh, yes. Special cook with army, with officers' mess course experience. One an assistant cook, I think. Because if you had to give him a holiday, okay? I mean, he had to go out in the evening occasionally. And then there was the batman again, used to wash up. I mean, if Metheringham very likely wasn't wanted for duty as a flunky, he would have been told he got to go there and wash up.
Was there a pretty traditional ritual to the meals and the way they were served?
Oh, yes. Yes, on breakfast time, we always had it on the sideboard. We came in, we saw bacon and eggs and a heating thing, you know, and we saw ham, and we had cornflakes, if there were such things. Yes, there were cornflakes in those days. And occasionally porridge, I think, but I hated porridge. I loathed porridge, so I never touched it because it was lumpy when I was at school. And I loathed it ever since. And then lunch was a floating meal more, because they came in, and again on the sideboard, coals mostly, and we were in uniform, you see, in lunch, and Sandblast was in his suit, reasonably coloured suit, and he was there at the sideboard. "Now, sir, what would you like? What do you like? This is brawn, this is ham, this is something, or this is steak and kidney pie if it was cold in the winter, or this is stew, you know." And, of course, you could have beer if you wanted it. Again, one didn't have beer because, like, you could have a whiskey or gin because one couldn't afford it. And before lunch, a lot of married officers used to come in and sit on the bum freezer before they went back to their own lunches and have either a gin or a sherry, gin and tonic, sherry, or, no, not whiskey. None of them drank whiskey in the middle of the day, really. The one or two that were real topers did, if it was cold. And sometimes in the winter, which was lovely, we had port and a bit of cake served in the middle of the morning, because we started very early. And at 11's, you could either have coffee or you'd come and have a glass of port and a bit of cake. And that was free. That was the time when could sultans like money could drink. I don't say we never had a drink, because we perhaps could afford a sherry on a guest night, which was once a week. But that's about all.
And then was there a high tea before the dinner meal came later?
No, ordinary afternoon tea, where you had your own little pot, a little silver trays, little silver salvers, and your own little pot, and your own little milk jug, and your own bit of cake. Nothing. I mean, it was just afternoon tea, and there was no bread and butter or anything like that. And that was about 4 to 4:30, after you'd finished your afternoon's work.
And what time was dinner?
Dinner was 7:30 for 8. 7:30 you would have got to be in. 8 you went in, smartly on 8. And of course, when there was a guest night, which was once a week, there was a band night. The band played.
What happened?
And you had guests, and you played the regimental marches if they were other regiments. If not, I mean, if they were a parson or something, you didn't play Land of Hope. I mean, you know, the martial hymn.
Was there toast to the reigning monarch at the main meal at night?
Never. The Durham Light Infantry did not drink to the monarch. nothing on paper about it. The reasons, three reasons, advanced. None was ever verified, and that is why the light infantry don't drink to the monarch now, because they took on our, when the light infantry formed, they took on traditions from regiments. One, the first tradition is, in 1778, we fought the Caribs in the West Indies. And we were granted the, after good show, we were granted by the then king the title of Faithful, Faithful Durhams. That is our motto today, Faithful Durhams. And so we asked whether, as our faith was unimpaired, we need not drink the king's health. The king's health, as it was then. Right. Now, the other one is rather nasty one, really. When the Porter Lance was knocked off in 1830-something, the officers, it was when Prinny was on the throne, so it would be between 1820 and 1830,